podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses. Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to another round of the Best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. For those that may not know, SDHAM is the morning show attached to the Soccer Down Here, the SDH Network, running Monday through Friday, 9.05 a.m. Eastern Time start. Traditionally, we're supposed to go for 2 hours. Nine times out of ten, or really 10 times out of 9, we go more than 2 hours because there's a lot to talk about. We'll have guests drop by. We'll get some surprises along the way. And the conversation will always be about the beautiful game. And follow us on all of our social media platforms. That's Soccer Down Here, whether it's Instagram, it is X, it is Blue Sky, it is Facebook, it is YouTube, podcatchers, all of it. Go to Soccer Down Here, be a part of the conversation, and be a part of the SDH family, 24/7, 365. This time around, it's a lot from a bunch of different directions, but most of it having to do with the men's national team and getting prepared for the World Cup coming up in short order. There are times on the show when we get surprises and we get folks to come on and talk about it for a little bit. And that was one of the things that happened this week. Somebody's getting ready to take a red eye and hop on a plane and get ready for this particular tournament. They stopped by the morning show, thanks to our friends at Major League Soccer. That's one guest. We'll save that one for a second. Second guest is Michael Parkhurst. Michael and Greg Garza, part of the brain trust behind, or they are the brain trust behind the beginnings of and the advancement of Beyond Goals Mentoring at BG Mentoring on the Twitters and all of the social media, beyondgoalsmentoring.com. But Michael and Greg, on Friday mornings, they come by and they break down what's going on in the world of mentoring, what the challenges are for them, what the challenges are for their mentees, and what the process is like. And so we catch up with Michael first and foremost about men's national team activity, because training camp is going on here in suburban Atlanta, what it's like to wear the uniform representing your country, all of the pressure that goes along with it, the lessons that are there, and lessons that you can carry with you into your future life, meaning as a professional athlete and as a mentor. So we catch up with Michael Parkhurst about a bunch of things having to do with national team and pride and being there and lessons that you learn and feedback loops and a bunch of different topics that are there that are attached to everything, being a mentor, and especially with BG Mentoring on all of your social medias, beyondgoalsmentoring.com. Guest number three, the Gainbridge Super League is having their championship, the USL version of the USL's women's soccer division. They are having their championship match tonight at 7 o'clock. You can watch that on Peacock. And we caught up with both sides of the equation getting ready for the match in Lexington, Kentucky. But we're going to play for you the visitors and what it's like to be on the road and build the season the way that they have. Head coach, general manager for Carolina Ascent, Philip Poole, drops by SDHAM. And here's part of and you'll hear part of that conversation coming up in a bit. So it's about chasing a championship. It's about chasing a World Cup, responsibilities, mentoring, mentees, feedback, all of that. And then when you get to talk about the national team sometimes, some folks just drop in the door, like Marcelo Balboa. It's not every day you have a Hall of Famer drop in on SDHAM before he heads off to be a part of CBS's network coverage for the next month. Here's Chelo Balboa parachuting in to the morning show. Oh, wow. Look at this. Oh, Chelo, where are you, my friend? You're frozen. That's the first thing, is that Chelo is frozen. That's nuts. Okay. So, all right, hang on. We're getting a collision here. So, Chelo, go off of the Wi-Fi in the hotel.
What's up?
What's up, Chelo? Are you on the Wi-Fi in the hotel? There you go.
I'm going to turn it off.
There you. Well, no. They say stay on the Wi-Fi.
That's okay. Are we good?
Yeah, good. I'm glad to hear your voice, man.
What's up, buddy? How are you?
All right. Real quick, where are you, sir?
I'm in Pasadena doing some stuff for MLS, and then tomorrow, tonight, I take a red eye to do match day for CBS in Stamford, Connecticut.
Oh, man. Loving that. We had the camp going on in suburban Atlanta for the USMNT.
Yeah.
Your early vibe on what you're seeing about relationships, everything all orchestrated so they can go chase after this cup.
Listen, it's going to take them a little time. They just got into camp. They're just starting to train. The first time they've really been together. The pressure now of now you're in it. There's no backing out. Now you're in it. This is World Cup. So, listen, this group is I don't see a lot of hiccups. I don't see a lot of, you know, possible weaknesses when you replace this guy with that guy. The roster's pretty solid. I mean, the only thing you can't replace is a Christian Pulisic. You can't replace a Weston McKennie, but hopefully they stay healthy. And in this group, listen, we've had enough nonsense. Can we be honest? Let's just be honest. We've had so much nonsense lately with the it's so unprofessional to get an email. He should have got a phone call. We're professional athletes. Everybody's different. You got a phone call, great. You got an email, great. Are we really making that big of a deal about this? I mean, the World Cup's 2 weeks away. I'm more worried about a coach sending out an email that you didn't make the team. That's weird to me.
To me, I'm like, that's not a story. Coaches act differently. Move on, people.
Hey, listen, that's exactly my point. You know, and it took me, I got to be honest with you, initially I'm like, okay, would I rather have had the coach sit me down and talk to me? And then I thought about it after a few days. I'm like, what the hell is the coach going to say to me? Hey, I'm sorry you didn't make the team. Okay. And where do you go from there? You know what I mean? So it's all good, man.
Awkward conversations 101. It's just like, you know, you want to sit there in a room where there's a lot of dead air, or you just want to sit there and move on. I mean, that's like literally that's what I was thinking.
The coach isn't going to tell you exactly why you didn't make the team. I mean, he's the coach of the coach. He's going to be like, listen, this is a group I picked. This is what I felt is the best for me and this group to move forward. And so, you know, I have kind of turned my mind a little bit on after a few days of mulling it over.
Just another couple of minutes with you, and then we'll let you loose because you got stuff to do.
I'm good, bro. I'm good. You got me.
Well, I mean, it's just I'm going to reserve this and catch up with you during the tournament too, while you're in Connecticut. That's okay.
Got that.
And you'll be on the East Coast. You won't be getting up at like 7:30 to talk to me in the morning. It'll be a normal hour.
Interview, so I'm good.
So real quick.
Yeah.
What are you the most confident about this group? What concerns you the most?
You know what? This is when you look at this group in the history of soccer in this country, we've never had so many players playing in top teams. We've never had players winning Champions League. So when you look at this group, you look at very skillful, very talented players. The hardest part about soccer is the hard part, and that's finding the chemistry. Putting 11 players to kind of sink in and be on the same page for the World Cup. And I think that's the hardest part as a coach. Now you've got to find the right chemistry on that field, the guys that you think will work together the best, because it's not just about an individual play, it's team. You're going to win a World Cup or you're going to lose a World Cup, not by an individual, because listen, Argentina won because they have Messi, but the other 10 players worked their ass off for him, to cover for him, to chase for him, for defend for him. We have 11 players that have to play a almost near perfect game to do something special in this World Cup, and they're capable of doing that. We've seen it. So now it's just a matter of a little bit of luck here, a little ball deflects off this guy's leg, and it goes that way, a good play, you know what I mean? So, but I would think the confidence is, and the positive is, this is a very skillful team individually. The negative is they've got to learn to play as a team. That's going to be the hardest part.
All right. Question from our host of our U.S. soccer programming, and I'll bring this into play here. And he asks about center backs. And he asks, goes, how do center backs build relationships during training? Feels like we haven't settled on the best pairing.
Well, you know, if you go back, Richards and Tim Ream have played a lot of games together. I mean, a lot of games together. Every time they're in camp, they're playing. So Different time, different era, different FIFA calendars. There's so many games these guys play now for their national team, through a Gold Cup, Nations League, you name it, they play. So a relationship is built basically by practicing, playing games, and a lot of these guys have played a lot of games. This is a young group that's been together for a long time. This will be the second World Cup that quite a few of these guys have been together. So that relationship's already there.
So you're heading to Red Eye, you're heading to CBS. What are you doing, sir?
Oh, I will be doing studio for CBS Match Day. I'll be doing morning footy. I'll be doing the podcast I have, Call It What You Want. So I will be in Connecticut for about 20, 25 days, previewing games, more than likely doing so a few watch-alongs, you know, like Saturday, like Sunday, we're doing the USA Senegal watch-along for CBS. So just going to enjoy this World Cup, my friend.
How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Always, it's great to hear your voice. Great to see you. And you know, I'll be knocking on your door soon. Be safe travels going to the East Coast. See you soon.
Thank you, brother. Have a great day.
As always, great to catch up with Cello and find out what's going on in his planet. And it was great to get his feedback there on one of the major topics when it comes to the USMNT in a bit of a lightning round as we were hanging on and almost having multiple guests on Friday morning. This is the Best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. And as promised, now we catch up with someone else who has worn the stars and stripes and has represented his country on about two dozen different occasions. And we catch up with Michael Parkhurst. We catch up with Greg Garza Friday mornings at 9:30 when they're not out conquering the planet. And we ask them questions about what it's like to be a mentor, what the feedback is from mentees, what the issues are that they tackle on a weekly basis with them. And, you know, feedback that they get and how they employ that. And you create a feedback loop and continue working forward. BG Mentoring, beyondgoalsmentoring.com, BG Mentoring on the Twitters and the 280-character app and all your social media. Here's our conversation about a bunch of things with Michael Parkhurst, which means one thing. That means that we reserve space. It's like, you know, you get parking spaces and everything. You know, you have the parking lot when you go to work. And in the SDHAM parking lot, you have those reserved spaces. And traditionally, one of the really great parking spaces, I mean, it's like literally you park, you forget your umbrella, you're okay because you can sprint to the front door. You won't have to worry about anything. Your briefcase doesn't get jammed up. The leather's preserved. All of the papers for the meeting are okay. One of those parking spaces is always reserved for our friends at Beyond Goals Mentoring. And so what that means is that now we bring in our buddy Michael Parkhurst to find out what's going on. And you, man, you're already off and running this morning. It looks like you didn't park in your parking space in the SDHAM parking lot. You parked out over by the exit, man.
Ready to go this morning.
Oh, boy.
Got to get out quick. That's the benefit of parking near the exit.
Yes, absolutely true. We spent a lot of the first half hour with a lot of time down in Fayetteville. And there is this team that is getting ready for this worldwide competition. And got to hear a lot from them about the players specifically, about what it was like to get the call for your country to be A, representing your national team, and then B, representing them in this situation. You know, as someone who has worn that crest and worn that jersey, I mean, what's it like to get the call, hey, you're going to be representing your country?
It's pretty cool, that's for sure. And I feel like every coach does do it differently. I know there's been a lot of heat on Pochettino for the way he did it, as far as emailing or sending a text message or whatever it was.
Yeah.
There's no good way to do it, I don't think. It was different when I was there in camp in 2014?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we had a pre-World Cup camp.
Right.
So we were all together. So when I got released, I was in camp. So it was just natural that Jurgen would have a face-to-face conversation.
Yeah.
I don't know if I was away from camp, if it would have made a difference if I got a phone call or an email.
Yeah.
But yeah, super excited. I still remember the first time I got a phone call from the national team.
Oh yeah. Who was it?
It was Pam. What was Pam's last name? I don't know off the top of my head, but she was like basically, the do everything for the national team back at the time. She did everything from booking flights and hotels and accommodations to communication to everything, anything and everything you needed. Pam was the lady you wanted to talk to. And she gave me a call and I was like, who the heck is this? I had never spoken to her before. I didn't know who she was. I had no idea that I might get called up into, this was the Gold Cup in 2006. I had no idea that I was even like a possibility of getting called up. So I was like, this sounds fishy. Yeah, super excited. So yeah, it's always awesome to get that email or the phone call.
And I mean, it was 25 caps for you, Cap, from 07 to 014, plus Olympics in 08. I mean, when you put the uni on for the first time, how different does it feel than, you know, it's, you know, you got your team, you have your team stuff and all the team attentions and everything. But when you're staring at it for that first time in the locker, I don't know if there was the great reveal, you open up a box and butterflies fall out or, you know, come out or whatever. But when you get the uniform there in front of you for the first time and you put all of that gear on, is it literally one of those different senses of responsibility? Does it wash over you then? When does it hit you that, oh, man, this is some serious ish here?
Yeah, I think every time you put the jersey on or you see it, it kind of gives you that feeling of, okay, this is bigger, right? We're representing the whole country and everybody that wants to play for the national team and supports the national team, and those that don't even know yet that they want to support the national team. So, yeah, I think that anytime you put the jersey on or you're in the locker room and you see it, you have that sense of responsibility to, the bigger calling there.
June 9, 2007, Trinidad and Tobago was the opponent.
It was 2007. I said six, yeah.
Yeah.
I've another year.
6-9-07. What do you remember about that match in particular?
I remember that I didn't think that I was going to get much playing time in this tournament because it was a very veteran roster. Mm-hmm. I was one of the very few younger guys on the roster. And this was game two of the group stage. And I started and I was surprised and excited. I had played in back three for a long time. So in college and with the Revolution. So playing in a back four was different. So I remember being a little bit nervous about that and how is it going to work? And, you know, that aspect of things and just playing with a new center back. I think it was Gooch, but I honestly can't remember.
Okay.
And I remember it was in LA, but that's about it. And we won.
See, but that last thing, that's what's most important.
Yeah.
You mentioned chemistry, and this is something that the guys down in Fayetteville have been talking about a lot. When you're kind of cramming for a test, even though you do have the time together in the past, you know, this one is different on a bunch of different levels. The chemistry, you kind of have a bit of muscle memory to it, but then you come into this, your next competition, and is it almost like relearning chemistry all over again? Or is it, okay, I've got muscle memory. Yeah, we're cool. But then there's some other guys that you might not have the relationships with. How does all of that play both on the field and between the ears when you're trying to get chemistry in a crash, like when you're crashing for a test, so to speak?
I think once you play with a guy once or twice, the chemistry's there. Obviously, it can get better over time, no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. But you gain enough knowledge to have success, because there's just little things you want to know, like how high does this guy like to keep the line, right? What kind of passing angle does he like? You know, does my outside back like to get forward all the time? Does that mean I need to cover for him? Does that mean I need to get a D mid to slide over? There's just little things that everybody plays each position just a little bit differently. And can you overcome? Of course. Right? These are all the best players in our country. So of course you can. But if you want to play at the very, very, very highest of potential, it is nice to know these little tendencies of the guys that you're going to be playing next to.
Do you have those kinds of in-depth conversations with your mentees when it comes to relationships and knowing where teammates are? What are those conversations like when it comes to assimilation, I guess?
Totally. Some of playing well is understanding who you're playing with and what are their strengths and what aren't their strengths, right? For example, I had a conversation with a mentee the other day saying, hey, okay, this player is new to your team. He's playing defensive mid. There are passes that you would normally play your defensive mid, who is very strong on the ball, that you probably don't want to play this defensive mid, right? Under pressure, back to opponent, on top of the 18-yard box. Like, don't put him in that position, right? Help him have success, which is going to help you have success. So you have to understand your teammates, right? If you got a blazer on the wing, put it into space, right? Take advantage of it, right? Play to each other's strengths, and we can have success collectively.
And, you know, when you have these conversations, is the feedback, what's the feedback loop like? Okay, so you have that first conversation with a mentee. Hey, you know, you've got these new teammates, learn them. How much of a feedback loop do you get? Yeah, I did what you were telling me, and we had this kind of a moment the other day. What's the feedback loop like?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Do they give you like...
No, I don't get much of a feedback loop. And probably some of that's on me of circling back and asking. You know, I think that they understand it because sometimes they get the feedback, okay, that makes sense, or didn't think about that, or... you know, what should I take into account? So there's questions that are asked. But very little do I actually circle back afterwards, after I've kind of mentioned it and brought it to their attention, to say, hey, how'd it go, type thing.
Well, and I mean, the reason that I bring that up is because when you have conversations with mentees, it's a constant learning evaluation. It is stages and steps, and you might have a stage or a step where you have progress here in one column, but then you might have a regression in another column, or it might be static in a third column, and it's like trying to figure out, okay, how do we make this as even a distribution of learning as possible to where everything ends up net positive, even if there is the kind of idea where, oh, okay, so this was a plus this go around, but it sacrificed this, or I forgot to do this. And that was why I was asking about the kind of consistency and feedback loops that you get.
Yeah, for sure. And it absolutely makes sense, because if you're out there on the field, for example, and you don't normally, and we did this with Darlington Nagby when we played with him, it was like, hey, if you're
in trouble. He actually spoke up? He actually said something?
No, of course not. I'm saying when we played with him, it was like, hey, if you're in trouble, just give it to D. Right. It doesn't matter if there's a guy on him. It doesn't matter what kind of pass you give him. Just, you know, screw it. Just pass it to Darlington.
Huh.
Versus, you know, if you've got somebody, anyone else in that position, you're like, you can't do that. So what do you do now? Right. You got to figure it out on your own differently. So yeah, that changes the way you play a little bit, which can result maybe in a couple more mistakes or putting yourself under pressure a little bit more, but it's going to help your teammate. So yeah, you're right. There's a give and take, and shoot, it's like our golf game, right? One day the driving's on, one day the putting's on. It's tough to get going on the same day.
No.
But it's the same thing in soccer too, where it's like, hey, yeah, first touch might be great today, but my crosses weren't good, or, you know, confidence is down a little bit, whatever.
I love the fact that you have confidence in my putting game. That does not exist, sir. In this particular dojo, my putting game is non-existent. To full disclosure, just to give you an idea, I'm going to go ahead and stand because you have to see this to believe it. But I don't have, actually, yeah, I do. All right. So yeah, I do have one of my putters here with me. I always have my putters here with me. So
look at that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So traditionally, you know how, you know, when you putt, it's like straight on, you know, shoulder width and all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because I catch myself looking entirely too much, and you know, the whole pendulum idea of, okay, where's the hole? What I started doing a long time ago, and this is back in the days of black and white television, kids. I opened up my stance to where basically my feet are almost perpendicular to each other. But what that does is that opens me up to see, and I'm not doing this the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wide open stance, feet are at about a 90 degree angle. And so that way I can work my way through and I don't have to continue and get caught, you know, with my head down or looking in a weird spot. So I'm trying to get that done. So no, the fact that you have confidence in my putting game, yeah, I've gone through, that's basically what I do now. I'm like wide open. So if anybody ever wanted to throw a water balloon at me, they would absolutely hit me square in the mush because my stance is so open now.
Or you'd see it coming because your stance is so open, you know?
That's true. I like that. I like your optimism. But yeah, still, when it comes to optimism in my putting, that does not exist. Yeah. Halftime with Michael Parkhurst here on the Friday Free Kick, going over everything from golf and his confidence in my golf game, which is more than one of us, to mentoring and what's going on at Beyond Goals. And feedback. When you were playing, did you want feedback as much as it was given? Did you want more feedback as much as if it wasn't given to you enough? How were you when it came to, you know, hey, new guy, am I giving you the right weight? You know, what was your feedback loop when you were playing, and did it differ as you got older?
Yeah, I appreciated feedback for the most part. You know, I think that as you get a little bit older, you get more in general. Get more confident in yourself and what you're doing, so you're a little bit more comfortable in receiving feedback.
Yeah,
I think I was pretty open. I mean, I think I've told you before with Stevie Nicol, my first coach as a pro, we didn't watch any video. There was very little feedback, but no feedback was the feedback.
Uh-oh.
You know, if you were getting feedback or you were put on the bench, that was your cue to know, okay, things aren't going that great.
Wow.
So
but what's it, what's it like having no news is good news? That's got to freak you out though, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't think it's the best way to go about things. Everybody does it differently, but I like to know. And you know, I have these conversations with Conno Smith, our coach up in Rhode Island, as far as, you know, conversations with players of letting them know, hey, you're going to start this game, you're not going to start this game, reasoning, right? You don't have to do that, you know, because he just had a bad experience with a player where, you know, it didn't quite go as well as he wanted the conversation to go. I was like, why am I even doing this? Why do I even talk to the players if they're going to give me an attitude?
Yeah.
You know, and we had the conversation over, right? There's positives and negatives to doing it, but I still think it's the right thing to do, if, you know, and I think players in general want to know where they stand and what the feedback is, because I think a lot of them just want to improve and want to know, okay, hey, if it's not going well for me in your eyes, why? Mm-hmm. What can I work on? And so I always encourage my mentees to ask for feedback. It's something that drives me bonkers about ID camps in college, that they don't give much feedback, and it's crazy. But yeah, I think feedback is super valuable and important.
Okay, so I'm writing down ID camps as a topic here. I mean, why then? And so I feel like Ross Geller all of a sudden. Why? Why go to an ID camp if you're going and you don't get feedback? It seems counterintuitive.
Yeah, the best thing about ID camps is twofold. One is, if you're a player that plays on a team that doesn't play in big showcases and big tournaments and whatever, and there's certain schools you really want to try and get in front of, going to an ID camp gets you in front of their coaches. No questions asked, right? They are there. They are going to see you. You can interact with them. So that's of benefit, no doubt about it. And I think that, you know, for players that even do go to ID camp or go to showcases, it's still the same thing where you get an interaction with the coach. You're able to meet them. You're able to see the campus. Coaches want to see players multiple times. So there is some benefit to ID camps. The downside is college coaches will invite anybody to their ID camp. You don't know the level of the play at the ID camp, what it's going to be like. And then I see it time and time and time and time and time again that they'll get some sort of feedback during the camp, like, oh, you're doing great. Oh, you know, work on this, oh, this or that. And then nothing afterwards. And players reach out and nothing. And I just think that if you're asking players to come to your ID camp and you're going to have them for 2 days and they're going to spend all this money to come, every player should be getting a, this is what we see in you. This is what you need to improve. This is the level that we think you're at. Because if I was going, if I had a kid that was going to an ID camp at UCLA and the coach said, hey, just a heads up, your player is a D2 player, it'd probably save me a ton of cash and a lot of confidence and all this stuff instead of going to 16 other ID camps or all these things at D1 schools when I'm like, okay, maybe we need to be checking out some D2, D3 schools.
Well, and these days, I would think that, and if I'm wrong, then let me know. I would think that it's almost like American football, where the decisions for your mentees are either, okay, because there's always the brass ring. It's like, yeah, I want to go to Wake. You know, I want to go play at Wake. Or I want to go play at Clemson. Or I want to go play, you know, someplace that is, you know, gangbusters or whatever. Big name, you know, big pedigree, all that. But I would think that today, considering what the industry is, and I call it that because college athletics is a business, that if you want to play now, then you're not going to those marquee places. You're looking for a Marshall. You're looking for something in the Sun Belt. You're looking for something where, you know, if you're a D2 player, you start in the Gulf South or wherever. And then if you work out well there at that level for a year, because of NIL and the transfer portal and all these kinds of things, you can work your way up the ladder to that point that you thought that you would be at it, you know, ground zero at day one. But if you work to it, then you'll get there eventually on your own merit. It's not just parachuting in and sitting on a bench. Am I wrong?
No, 100% right. Yep. And to your point of transfers, I looked at all the D1 transfers last window, so not the current window. I think the window might still be open or just closed, but the one in the winter. And 25% of the players that transferred to a D1 school came from outside of D1. Mm-hmm. So NAIA, D2, D3, JUCO. Mm-hmm. So 25% is a decent number. You know, and that's just of that window. And then there's this window as well. So there's opportunities abound, which is great. And it's necessary because now we've got this ruling coming in June about the 5-5, and that's going to affect recruitment negatively, potentially. So it's challenging. Mm-hmm. We'll see what the ruling is and if they adjust things. But if you've got a max roster of 28 players,
yeah,
you've got seniors who now all of a sudden qualify for an extra year who are not going to be moving on now from your program. Where's the room to add the incoming freshmen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't have taxi squads like you do in the National Football League. I do want to come back to the 5-5 in a second because, once again, as always, in the last 10 minutes of the segment, you open another window. When you're having conversations with your mentees, are they looking at their number one choice only, like your 17, 18-year-olds rising, junior rising, senior graduating? Are they looking at their number one choices? Do they understand the landscape more than when you started as a mentor? Do they understand the dynamics now?
For sure, after my first conversation with them. you know, I think that everybody – everybody's got their hopes and their dreams, right? Which is important. Yeah. I think that there's a good amount who understand and keep things open while still hoping to have those blinders on of, hey, here's where I really want to go. Yeah. I think everybody knows I should do this and should do that. But I also think that we have that natural tendency to, you know, want to play in D1, want to play at a high level. And that's where the communication is important from these coaches, because, you know, it's very difficult for players and families to discern what's real interest and what's not. Because all of a sudden, if you think you're getting some interest from a couple D1 schools, even if they're like low level or mid-major D1 schools, now all of a sudden the mind frame in the players and the families' mind changes to, oh shoot, we are D1 level, we focus there now. And now the D2, D3 options kind of become less relevant. So yeah, it's tough. It is really challenging.
I mean, when trying to remind / convince, hey, you got these seniors that aren't going anywhere. Are you happy with being roadblocked for a season, maybe two, to hang at your number one absolute choice? Or do you want to play and get reps so you can sit there and have something on tape where, right, if you're blowing up D3, people can sit there these days and go, oh, okay. And then someone knocks on your door that's maybe a mid-major or, you know, something like that in D1. But yeah, it's almost like now, as a student athlete and as a parent or parents of same student athlete, you almost have to look at things in three dimensions now because of number one choice. It's like doing the SATs. It's like you sit there and you bubble in the institution, and, you know, if you get an 1100, then they'll sit there and they'll write back to you and go, nah, fam, you need another 300 points. Get back to me when you get to 1400. Or, yeah, okay, that's great. But then you have these other schools that might have been eavesdropping. And it's like, oh, 1100. Okay, that'll work here. You want to be in the honors program. And it's like, focus on what really matters. Do you want to sit, get that big education, in quotation marks, and then think that 2 years is going to help you out? But remember that folks from the other 2 years that are from the outside, they're now competing with you too, to get into those original spots that you thought you could be getting into by staying. So that this whole idea of now having to think about things in three dimensions, if you're a parent, if you're a coach, if you're the student athlete, trying to be there as a guide in the right way for the adult to make sure that the kid understands the whole landscape. I mean, it's probably different than what it was, what, 2-3 years ago even?
Oh, for sure. And it's changing, you know, monthly, it seems like.
How much of a challenge is that for you and Greg, having to keep up with what's going on in the outside world and still be a mentor and have folks understand, hey, this is how it is right now. Things totally are still changing. How much of a challenge is that for you guys?
It's a big challenge. It's a little easier for Greg because his kids are in youth soccer, because right now we're talking about the changing of landscape in college soccer. Uh-huh. But it's happening everywhere, right? There's new leagues, there's new rules. Right, we had a whole host of mentees go through the change of birth year to school year, change back, right? That changed a couple years ago, and now it changed back again. So splitting of teams and all this stuff and tryouts. So we just went through all of that. Most players have had their tryouts now. So youth soccer changes every year. There's new leagues and new acronyms. The landscape is crazy. Same thing in college. So yeah, it is a lot to try and, but it's a lot for our parents too, right? And so we do our best to stay on top of it so that we can provide our best guidance to some of these families who are just, you know, confused and lost throughout the process.
How much time do you spend learning in addition to mentoring these days?
A decent amount. And sometimes I learn from my mentees. Right. Sometimes they're telling me about, hey, did you know this? Or, hey, you know, my son plays for this team or that team and this change or that change. And I'm like, oh, wow, I didn't even know that. So thank you for that information. and they don't honestly, some of them are really awesome. They don't really expect that I know every in and out of every acronym and rule change. So once I have the information, though, I can help make a better decision for them.
Yeah. So since you opened up the 5 and 5, 5 and 5, I'm going to put that to the side because that's, like I said, that's over here and that's more than 3 minutes of a conversation. So my last question for you this time, last book that you read.
The Happiness Project.
Okay.
Essentialism was right before that.
Okay. So, are you projecting happiness and are you essential?
Ever trying. We can always do better. But yeah, I've taken a few things from both of those books. A few things that don't apply, or I don't know.
Well, but the thing is, it doesn't. I think that learning has its own universality. I think that if it doesn't matter where you're learning and what you're learning from. I still think that no matter what you touch, there's going to be a lesson attached to it. And it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be, if you thought a book was going to give you a lesson, it probably gives you something else. If there's a nonfiction book that you're reading that gives you something, oh, I can apply this to here. You know, I think that it doesn't really matter. I think everything that we touch when we're trying to learn will impact us either immediately or later on down the line. Have you thought about writing a book?
I was just going to tell you that, John, I have just recently, because I think maybe I told you before that I wish I had written one earlier, but the most recent book I read was by a friend of mine who sent me his book because he wants me to write the foreword of it.
Ooh, okay.
And it's a really, really interesting book about resiliency and they call it elasticity. They think that, being resilient just brings you back to where you were. But being elastic means you can stretch the boundary and get past where you were so that you can continue to get better. So it's really interesting and scientific here and there. But I really enjoyed the book and can apply it to a lot of the things that I had throughout my career and what I continue to talk about now. So I'll probably write the foreword for this book. And I was talking to him saying like, yeah, I thought about writing a book. He's like, yeah, it's never too late. So, I think that you've said that to me as well. So it's a possibility.
Let's turn that possibility into a probability, huh? I mean, it literally is like piecing together a jigsaw puzzle. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. And having done it, what, 6 times? Well, it's, yeah. And I've got 7 and 8 in the queue and I need to like clone myself to be able to have the book writing person write those 2. And then, you know, focus on everything else that's going on. But no, it is, like I said, and, you know, we get calls from PR people all the time. It's like, hey, do you want to have so-and-so on? He's written a book. Do you want a PDF or do you want the book? I'm like, no, I want the actual book. Because for me, there is nothing better than opening a book and turning a page and conquering that page and the information that's on it. And then when you've done that for however many pages and you close the book, there's that sense of accomplishment, A, in the written form of it, and B, that you have taken someone else's work that you valued and went from one cover to the other. So no, I always want the book because I know the effort that went into it from the author, and you learn something from that and the satisfaction of turning pages and learning all the way through.
I agree with you. I love the permanent book. I spend enough time on electronics, so I don't want to read on electronics. I don't even like doing my crossword on the computer. I want to print that thing out and I'm going to do it with pen and on the desk. So I'm with you.
Columbus Dispatch Sunday Papers. He is a better golfer than Brad Guzan. The video is available to prove it. God knows what was left on the cutting room floor where they wanted to make sure that I'm sure that Brad ended up looking better than you in the presentation. As always, my friend, it's great to go down these roads because it's three-dimensional talk that goes places that obviously we don't normally anticipate, but it's always a great, a stimulator when it comes to what it's like to be a mentor, what it's like having mentees and all of that give and take. It's great to see you, my friend. And, you know, I'll be banging on your door when it comes to everything about this cup that the world is chasing after here in a bit. What are you doing this weekend?
Baseball, softball weekend. Exciting.
I can sense it. Deacon's looking at you like, man, stop talking.
My work partner left me because the kids are home.
Wow.
I know.
Peace out. All right. Be good.
Have a great weekend, John.
See you soon. Michael Parker is going into added time this morning.
The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, so literally, it's he's a better golfer than Brad Guzan. Don't let anybody tell you different. Always great to catch up with Cap and find out what's going on in his brain. And, of course, usually about 5 minutes left in a conversation, he'll open up another door. And we got into the whole recruiting thing. We started to anyway. And we're going to have to put a bookmark in that for his next appearance. This is the best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. And, once again, championship. Lexington, Kentucky, Saturday night, 7 o'clock on Peacock. Gainbridge Super League final. Carolina Ascent goes on the road to take on Lexington SC, the 3 seed at the number 1 seed in the Gainbridge Super League. Here's our conversation with half of the equation, head coach and general manager of the traveling team, the Carolina Ascent, the Climbers head coach and general manager, Philip Poole. I don't know how many of you know this, but there is a title that a particular individual is chasing. And the last time that we had him on this show, I remember the situation. I was sitting in the back of the Subaru in Apalachicola, Florida, doing an interview. And because I was down there at the Gulf and we needed to catch up with this particular gentleman because things were kicking off. And so now we go from January to May and catch up with the head coach and general manager of Carolina Ascent. Coach Poole, how are you this morning? Glad to have you with us. All right. You were talking about the league in general, and you mentioned that it was an American league, bottom team can meet the top team, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we're in growth mode, right, where, you know, the league now is coming to the end of year two. You know, the I don't think we'll really see exactly who we are and where we're at till year 5, 6, maybe 10. But look, we've got a really committed group of owners. We will have more teams joining the league in due course. And I think, again, In the greatest women's soccer nation in the world with the biggest amount of players, you know, we look what we're doing, what Canada are doing, what Mexico are doing, obviously NWSL leading the way. But in our region, you look, you know, just rewind 5 years, right, being the soccer junkie you are. 5 years ago, we're about to be at 18 NWSL teams, maybe, you know, 10 to 12 Gainbridge Super League teams, Mexico, Canada, Caribbean. I mean, football's going crazy. And then, you know, I'm going to cross genders for a second, and I've done this for a long time, but you're looking at 100 plus men's professional teams in this country. At one point there were 8, right? Mm-hmm. So I think the landscape in general is booming, and I think we're kind of following suit with that.
What have you learned as a part of this build from the ground up about yourself as both an administrator and as a coach?
Wow, I think that's that could be a dissertation. I think,
hey, we got time and space, brother. That's all. It's all good.
All right. So from a building the club standpoint, I think it's a really good process to go through. To start with a piece of paper and a table and a chair, and, you know, to start to build a club, build a roster, build a front office, build an identity. You know, all kind of buzzwords. But to actually go through it, it is pretty cool. And I'll tell you right now, I'm sure I've made tons and tons of mistakes, but I think that's the best part about it. When you start with something new, you can create something, you can kind of build it in using your experiences and using others. So for that standpoint, it's essentially, we're still on that building journey, still figuring things out day by day, still making mistakes. But again, I think as long as anything, you don't make the same mistake twice, you keep moving forward. But if that's rooted to your identity, to your non-negotiables, to really who you are and connected to the fabric of the Carolinas, I don't think you can go wrong as long as you're coming from a place of good intent. So building a club, something I never thought I would do, a skill set now that I can put on the resume and say, yep, done that, been there, that's interesting. Here are all the mistakes I made, but here are the 3 or 4 really good things that we did and we created.
Well, and I mean, your history is the college game in the Carolinas, a lot of time involved with the WNT and a lot of U's that were in front of the rosters that you were a part of when it came to coaching. And you mentioned just how it's been the last 5 years and everything. What about there specifically with Carolina and the build? How successful have you been in fragmenting yourself and splitting yourself off to be like, okay, I got to be the coach here, I got to be the GM here, and then they mix, and then you might be thinking about one thing while you're doing the other. How hard is it for you to kind of split your person into like sections so you can focus on what you need to focus on?
Yeah, I think that there is that is it, right? So I think there's a shelf life to how long you can do this for, right? The bigger the organization gets, right? You know, now we're at 70 employees, right? And you know, it keeps growing and growing. And I think the bigger an organization gets, the shorter the shelf life is to have a dual role of head coach and general manager. I think in the short term, in the building phase, I think it's a great idea. And I'll give you a real example. So even right now, you know, we have a championship game coming up in clear enough 48 hours. Mm-hmm. I can think of nothing else, right? But now I've got board meeting, marketing, we've got player contracts, we've got end of season meetings, we've got, you know, people want to know, hey, what does next Tuesday look like? And the football part of me, the football coach, says we have a game on Saturday, and it's you know, so it's difficult. But the bigger we get, the more we need, the more problems come up, the more things that need to be solved. And so I do think it has a shelf life, but I think in an initial growth of an organization like us, I think it's actually a pretty smart move.
How difficult is it for you to delegate and or have the trust in the individuals that you have assembled around you, whether we're talking the coach version or the GM version? It's like, no, I got to focus on talking to a morning show in Atlanta. I got to focus on that as coach. You know, I got to focus on getting us ready on the field. I got to put the off the field stuff over to the side. Or, you know, when you have a break, I got to assemble players and get ready for a season. You know, how difficult has it been for you to sit there and either delegate or put stuff off to the side so you can focus on being that other person?
Yeah, so I don't think it has been difficult. I think it's essential. Mm-hmm. It has, again, for me, you know, we have an amazing staff, front office, support staff, coaching staff. And I've always set this out, and it's in writing, which is good. This has to function if I get hit by a bus, right? This can't stop if I'm done. So for me, even from a team standpoint, coaching standpoint, I have to be confident in the people around me. From a general manager, GM, team, business, you know, contracts, compliance, I have to be confident in the people around me. And, you know, that's how we kind of set it out with all the departments, from marketing, ticketing, you know, you name it. So I think it's not a how difficult. Mm-hmm. It has to be done. And I think I've learned to be even better at it. I don't think you can ever be prepared to be ready. Like, ready is a mentality and a mindset. Action and steps are real things. And I think people spend a lifetime and a career trying to be ready. You're never going to be. So you have to make decisive actions and steps forward, and you have to trust the people around you. And, you know, it's I'm getting a bit deep, but it's like relationships, right? If you go into a relationship skeptical, you remain there. If you go into a relationship and open yourself up and say, hey, we're going to do this, I'm going to put it on the table. And that's what we've done from day one with our staff, with our ownership. So not difficult, because it's essential. It has to happen. And if I get hit by a bus, nothing changes.
Philip Poole, multiple business cards with Carolina Ascent as they get ready for the Gainbridge Super League final coming up this weekend, where Ascent take on Lexington in Lexington. When you look back at this season, has there been one thing or multiple things that have been pleasant surprises for you along the way, whether it's been individual effort that you may not have anticipated, somebody stepping up into a role that you didn't anticipate them doing, off the field stuff, getting to a title game? What have been like the pleasant surprises this year for you?
Yeah, I think when obviously after the season, when things are done, we'll have a kind of look back and we'll kind of have a debrief and we'll reflect a little bit. But I think before we do that, I'd say this, that we had to make some hard decisions this year, mainly from a football standpoint, which was we went through two periods of time where we weren't playing well, losing a few games. And I think the easiest thing to do as a coach, as an organization, is to come in on Monday and say, okay, we need to make changes. She's not doing this. She's not good enough at that. If we play like this, but I think the hardest thing to do is say, no, this is who we are. This is our identity. This is our style of play, and we believe in it. And it's an expression I stole from Roberto Martinez, is I'd rather die on my feet than walk on my knees. So the easy thing to do would have been to change, to pivot, to change course, to look for fault, but to say, no, I actually trust our players. I trust our coaching staff. I trust our organization. And most, I trust myself, but I trust who we are, how we play, and what we want to do. And if that's not good enough, that's on me. But again, I choose to die on my feet instead of walk on my knees. So for me, I look back at that, not just for myself as a coach, but as our organization, to say, let's remember who we are and what we do and what we've built in the short term. That's worth something and it means something. And I think we all do it in our normal lives. You know, this isn't working out, so we'll do something different. Well, sometimes you have to double down and dig your heels in a little bit and, you know, roll your sleeves up and make it work. And I'm proud of our organization for that. So I think that was a big challenge, that we had the opportunity to bail. We had the opportunity to change course and we didn't. And I'm thankful that we're still on course for Saturday.
For someone who's walking in the door for the first time, whether it's in person in Lexington or they're dialing up the match on their favorite device, who are some of the folks to naturally gravitate toward when they're watching Carolina Ascent for the first time that have gotten you to the last game of the year?
Yeah, so from year one to year two, we retained the most players in the league. So we kept the core together, and it's something we talk about, right? Like championship teams, they win, championship teams lose, but championship teams are consistent, not just in results, but in performance, behaviors, process. So we kept a really good core from last year. You know, Jillian Aguilera, you know, last year's Defender of the Year, Golden Playmaker. This year, she's stayed on course. She's another, you know, all-league selection. You know, Jillian Aguilera epitomizes kind of what we do. You know, we have some big names back from last year in Mia Corbin and Jenna Butler and Addison Merrick. And, you know, the list is long. And then this year we integrated some new players and we did it in the January transfer window. So brought in some experience in Tyler Lucy, you know, won multiple NWSL championships. Shea Groom, I mean, career speaks for itself. Ava Cook from Chicago and Lillian Abbott from Angel City. So to bring that core back and keep the consistency, but to integrate some experience and some quality was also fun and a challenge. So I think we got some great names, some great personalities to watch. But I think I'd probably go back to someone like Jill, who really epitomizes what we do. We can be sensational at times, and then there's times we've got to defend and dig in, and I think she'll show you both of those.
And then you go between the sticks and you pick up, you know, a little over a year ago, you pick up someone that a lot of folks in the southern part of our footprint remember from her time at South Georgia Tormenta in Sydney Martinez. And you see the talent that she has between the sticks. And obviously, you know, you know, you don't give up any goals. Worst thing is going to be, you know, you walk out with a point, but to have quality keepers as well to help you out at the back of the back line really has been integral for your defense too.
Yeah, I mean, I think looking at the collective first, right? Last year we had the Golden Glove winner in the league, Megan McClellan, right? Mm-hmm. Crazy. Then we had an all-league selection in Sam Leshnek, right, who done wonders for us. So the goalkeeping core was pretty strong. And then we signed Sydney, right? Sydney's done so well with Puerto Rico. I don't even think she's close to her potential still. But Sydney's been phenomenal for us in the second half of the season. It's not just the goalkeeping. It's more she had to wait a little bit. She had to wait behind Megan, again, a Golden Glove winner in our league. And she was patient and she worked hard. And, you know, when a chance came, she's taken it. I think the world of Sydney, so we call her Marty. It's very strange to call her Sydney. But Sydney's done great. And I think she's got more to give too.
What concerns you the most about Lex this weekend? And what are you the most confident about going on this road trip to try and get a title?
Lexington are a really good organization, right? And you know, for those that don't know, right, they have a men's team that are doing great, really well funded in the USL Championship, women's team that are doing great. They have a full youth academy. They built their own 9-field facility. They built their own soccer-specific stadium. And it's like a little known secret. So from an organization standpoint, Lexington are in a good spot. Good coach, good players, good people. I've got nothing but great things to say about them. And Lexington, you know, the headline is they went from worst to first. right? Finished bottom of the league last year and won the Shield this year. Now, in fairness, it's a completely different team. They essentially reloaded the whole thing. And they brought in experience, right? And I think that's the piece where now they've got some experienced, older, more senior players that have been around, kind of been there and done it. And they play a good brand of possession-based football. So easy on the eye, good to watch, but they've got some experience. And I think they're backed by good ownership and a good club. When you look at ourselves, right, is be naive to think, oh, we don't focus on the opponent. But we put such a heavy focus on us, ways that we can, you know, again, sometimes I look at football in simple terms, right, is, you know, we as coaches have the tendency to really overcomplicate it. And, you know, if you put it in simple terms, is how can you get your most dangerous players on the ball in the most dangerous areas as much as possible? And how can we limit their dangerous players in the least dangerous areas as much as possible? So we know for us that we'll try and put our dangerous players in situations to be successful, and we'll try and limit theirs. But it's really about how we can do that, not really about what Lexington have to bring. Again, as much respect as I give them, more about us than them.
No doubt about it. 7 o'clock, shortly thereafter, kick on the weekend up there in Lexington. Carolina has sent the Climbers. That I saw that nickname and I was like, oh, that's cool. That's kind of like, that's very three-dimensional when you come up with that one. I was digging that. It's always great to see you, my friend. And completely and totally just love what you're building up there with Ascent and safe travels. And we'll be watching the match this weekend. And, you know, we'll be catching up with you on the flip side. It's always great to see you. And, yes, proper hydration during guesting segments. We are a fan of that. So that is always a good thing.
Nice cup of tea. Well, listen, thanks for having us again. I appreciate what you do and the support you give us in our league. We're growing and we're building. And, you know, those that are there at the start, I think they get it. So thank you.
Appreciate it. Be good, my friend. We'll see you soon.
Yeah.
There he goes. Philip Poole, head coach, general manager, Carolina Ascent. And they're going to be traveling. It's like in mass, because if you only traveled with Coach Poole, then it would be just like him and there wouldn't be players out there going up against Lexington on the weekend. So it is Lex SC and it is Carolina Ascent, Gainbridge USL Super League final, and 7 o'clock on your Saturday. So have that earmarked on your favorite device. Go watch, be a part of that. And it's always great to catch up with him. Because like I said, last time I caught up with him, I was sitting in the back of the Subaru and we were taping something because I was down at the Gulf. I was not here in the Imitation Palatial Studio. I was down on the Gulf and it was like the, you know, hey, getting to know you before the season starts in January interview. But no, it's been great to see what they've been able to build there in Carolina and get them to this point. And Coach mentioned the coach version of Coach Poole mentioned, you know, worst to first with Lexington. And it's our friend Steve Cook is up there as well as a part of the whole build. And it's great to see everything going on up there. Once again, last game of the year, Gainbridge Super League, 7 o'clock, Saturday, Bookham Dano, aloha. So there we go. All right. So it's always great to catch up with Coach Poole and find out what's going on. So left back Allie Brown from Lexington, she's going to be joining us later this afternoon. We'll air that in tomorrow's show. And she's been causing problems for everybody in the Super League from the back line. Rookie out of the University of Tennessee. And she will be the other half of the equation, catching up with her at 4 o'clock this afternoon. So that is your, that is half of your Gainbridge Super League preview, catching up with Coach Poole and find out what's going on there with their build this season in Carolina. Some of the coolest gear though, some of the really cool gear. And, I'm probably going to go very, very poor in their pro shop. So yeah, Lex SC and Carolina Ascent. Seven in a row, seven on the spin for Carolina heading into this matchup tonight on Saturday night. So it's good to know that that they call her Marty. So Sydney Martinez. It's always you know, when we saw that, obviously it's another natural gravitation point. But yeah, signing her and having her be a part of things and her eight starts and I think her goals against is one in her matches. But yeah, it's always good to see where. Folks that we see them grow and get to their next stages, and to see Coach Poole sit there and say that Sydney Martinez has some other things that can be accomplished. She's not finished yet with her curve. So we'll keep an eye on that as well. We'll be right back. As always, it's great to catch up with Coach, whether it's sitting in the back of a Subaru or in a studio space. But he's chasing after a championship, and they get the opportunity to do that once again Saturday night, 7 o'clock, from Lexington, Kentucky, and that you can watch on Peacock. Thanks, as always, to everyone associated with making this show what it is on a weekly basis, from Kirk Morrison and MLS Soccer to Marcelo Balboa, Michael Parkhurst, Beyond Goals Mentoring, beyondgoalsmentoring.com. And you end up with the Gainbridge Super League, Philip Poole and Carolina Ascent. You get Marcelo Balboa dropping in. So it's Hall of Famers. It's national team players, folks that have won MLS Cups, folks that are chasing after championships. And that's just a small sample of what we can tackle on a weekly basis on SDHAM, on the Soccer Down Here Network. You can catch that on YouTube, X, Twitch, or later on in the day on your favorite audio podcatcher. So that's always part of the discussion when it comes to everything in the world of soccer attached to us here at the SDH Network. For everybody here at SDH, I'm just John Nelson. Thanks for dropping by. That is another round of the Best of SDHAM. Mucha Plati, I'll play it safe. We'll catch up with you again next week.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.